This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The UK has recently set an aggressive goal to operate off of 20% renewable energy by the year 2020. And that, believe it or not, has created a boom for the lumber industry in the American South. Since 2011, two mills in eastern North Carolina have pumped out more than 2 million tons of wood pellets that'll be shipped to the UK for burning in power plants. The state has recently approved plans for a new wood pellet shipping facility to be built in Morehead City. But the swift growth of the pellet industry in North Carolina is a concern to environmentalists who worry about the industry's impact on the state's ecology. Bruce Seislov is a reporter for the News and Observer, and he's been covering the growth of the wood pellet industry. He joins our conversation today. Bruce,
Hi, Frank.
Thanks.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. Bob Apt is here, too. He's a professor of forest economics at North Carolina State. Bob, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Bruce, let me start with you. UK's goal for renewable energy. Tell us about that.
Well, it's part of responding to climate change, and the idea is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So they're very serious about that there, and they want to reduce burning of coal, which is a big contributor to climate warming. And this goal of renewable fuels is a pretty hard one to meet in a pretty short time, and so they've set aggressive incentives to encourage electric utilities to make this change. The biggest electric utility in Western Europe is in Yorkshire. It's called Drax. It's also the biggest carbon polluter by the CEO's admission in the UK, and they're converting half their boilers from coal to wood pellets.
And so, these wood pellets are found. Why is the American Southeast apparently is the place where they're finding a lot of the wood, most of the wood?
Yes, we have lots of pine and hardwood forests in our coastal plains from Virginia down to Mississippi, and they're all close to seaports. So the economics and also by some reckoning the carbon calculations and how much it costs to produce wood pellets, ship them to the ports, ship them across the Atlantic to the buyers on the other end, make it economical by the industry measures, and also by controversial carbon calculations, make it better for the environment than digging coal out of the ground and burning it.
Yeah, we'll have to get to that because the math is the difficult part in all of this, or at least one of the difficult parts, but it is a complex and an interesting issue. So, Bob, what about this move to pellets? Let's start with the math a little bit. If you're going to compare burning wood to burning coal, just in terms of the output of carbon, is there an easy way to do that math?
There's not an easy way. That's one reason it's going to probably remain controversial. It all depends on what timetable you look at. Most of the studies say over the long run, switching from fossil fuels like coal to wood pays off. But initially, there's a debt that you encounter because you're burning a less efficient fuel, essentially. And it all depends on whether the trees come back and how fast they come back and those kinds of things that sort of affect the long-term calculation. So you can get a different answer if you draw a circle around a small area or if you look at 10 years versus 50 years versus 100 years.
And even the question of renewable, obviously it takes less time to grow a tree than a lump of coal.
Right.
But it's not as immediate as solar and wind.
Right. And another thing that plays into the regional story is the trees grow faster in the South, for example, than they do in the North or the Canada or the Pacific Northwest.
So, Bruce, how fast has the pellet industry and what impact has it had on the lumber industry in the Southeast?
Well, it's almost 0 to 60 almost overnight. For a few years, there have been some small pellet mills in eastern North Carolina that make pellets for some limited industrial use. But, Enviva, the biggest pellet maker in the country, opened the first of its two North Carolina mills in 2011. And those produce 865,000 tons a year to be shipped out of their port at Chesapeake, Virginia. By 2015, Enviva will be shipping another million pellets a year out of Wilmington, and another company.
You said
fuels,
million tons. Tons, yeah.
Whatever I said, yeah, a million tons of pellets a year out of Wilmington, and another company, Wood Fuels, will be shipping a smaller amount. They'll start out and eventually reach up to 600,000 tons a year out of Morehead City. Both of those are going into operation in less than 2 years. They're building more pellet mills. So we'll have, where we have two now in the Northeast that are industrial size for export, there'll be at least three more in southeastern North Carolina. Across the South, North Carolina is catching up with Georgia and some other deep South states that have been doing this longer, and hundreds of millions of dollars are being invested in these upgrades and building pellet mills and getting into this operation to meet the demand from the UK and Europe, and also to take advantage of a big supply and declining competition here. They're buying some wood that used to be bought by paper and pulpwood mills, some of which have closed in North Carolina.
So it's already having an economic impact, but that does bring us to the question of what wood this is, where it comes from, and ultimately, if the demand for wood pellets grow, what's going to be the environmental impact, Bob?
Right. So I think the best way to think of it is if you're going to talk about the forest in the South, we need to break it into hardwoods versus pine. Those are the two main categories. Most of the landscape is covered by hardwoods, but most of the commercial use is of pine. And the other thing is the small trees versus the big trees. So I'll call the small trees pulpwood often and the large trees lumber or sawtimber because that's their traditional uses. Who knows, in the future maybe we'll be calling small trees pellet wood rather than pulpwood. But so if you understand those, the dynamics are quite different between those categories. So, for example, the recession has hit pine lumber very hard because that's used in decks and trusses and housing. And so that production is down 30% and prices are down 50%. And that's the main income producer for landowners in the South is pine saw timber. Pine pulpwood is often used for packaging papers, for example. And unlike writing papers where are being displaced by digital media, packaging papers are taking off. For example, my recycling is full of Amazon boxes, for example. So the small pine trees, demand has not gone down, and the prices actually have gone up during the recession. Hardwoods, those markets are much thinner, I guess I would say. Hardwood lumber used to be used for furniture. That industry is no longer a strong part of the economy. And small hardwoods or hardwood pulpwood is in the market where demand has been declining. That's usually used for writing papers. And so the Franklin Mill in Virginia closed, and that's where a lot of Enviva mills are locating. And just a couple of weeks ago, the Cortland Mill in northern Alabama closed. That was 1,100 jobs. So that capacity is going down in the South.
And just to be clear, is it the same wood, for instance, if there's a decrease in demand for lumber in housing, would I take those trees and make them into pellets, or is it a different kind of wood that's being used for pellets?
Engineering-wise, you could do that, but value prospect-wise, a landowner wouldn't. The price proposition to the landowner on the difference between small trees and large trees is 4 to 5 times. So whereas the small pine tree price might be $6 to $12 or across the South, the sawtimber price before the recession would have been $30 to $50. Currently, it's $25 to $30.
And you're going to hang in there anyway and wait. You don't want to just chop these up now and then 2 years from now find out it's back up to $40.
Right. Yeah, so what's happening now is everyone who can delay is delaying.
Yeah. And Bruce, also, it's so at the moment we're looking at the tops of trees, knotty wood, things that aren't used traditionally in construction, right?
That's right. And foresters have told me that the new availability of a pellet market does make the difference in decisions by landowners about whether to harvest for saw timber and plywood and veneer now or not. I visited a logging operation in Hertford County near Enviva's Ahoskie plant. And the treetops, the smaller trees, the knotted, curved, hollow, rotten trees, and the bark and the small limbs would have been left to rot on the ground previously, and they wouldn't have made any money from it. And also, rotting on the ground creates more greenhouse gases as well. But the availability of the Enviva mill made that stuff marketable at $2 to $8 a ton, and there's 50 to 75 tons of that on an acre.
So it sounds like a lot of essentially waste wood is going into these pellets now, wood that wouldn't have been used otherwise, which suggests that you're not out there harvesting trees for the pellet industry? That's part of the question.
Well, you are and you aren't. If they hadn't had that market to get that return from that acreage, they wouldn't have been harvesting that tract of land for its main use, saw timber and plywood, the more valuable uses, because the big picture is how much can I get for harvesting my land, and this adds value and makes it more likely that they'll harvest it now rather than wait.
So, and then what happens if the demand for both lumber and pellets goes up in terms of harvesting, what we're going to see on those on that land?
So the traditionally, the pine lumber market drives the harvesting decision because it's five times more valuable than the other wood. So when and if housing comes back, you would expect to see an increase in harvest and more residues coming from that harvest. It's, I would say during the recession, since lumber production is so far down, it's forcing some of the folks who could use residues to use small whole trees because the residues aren't available.
So you might not be it doesn't raise the prospect of clear-cutting forests to get more pellets if the demand for pellets goes up, or does it?
So there's a couple ways to think about that. One is that, as Bruce mentioned, the pellets are a low-value proposition. They're at the high end, they're competing with pulpwood in terms of value, the small trees. So in the long run, you couldn't afford to own timberland and just have a small roundwood market unless those prices become close to what saw timber prices are. So a world where we clear cut and start growing things on a 12-year rotation would require prices four or five times higher than we are now. And of course, the energy proposition in terms of shipping it across would change with that price as well.
On the State of Things today, we are talking about wood pellets, the wood pellet industry. Is it a green industry? Bruce Seislov is a reporter for the News and Observer, Bob Apta, professor of forest economics at North Carolina State. And our conversation continues. We'll talk with environmentalists about the impact of this on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, today talking about the rise of the wood pellet industry in North Carolina. Wood pellets are produced from lumber. They're shipped to the UK to burn in power plants. It's billed as a form of green energy, but is it? Bruce Seislov is a reporter for the News and Observer, Bob Apta, professor of forest economics at North Carolina State. And joining our conversation now is Dana Smith, executive director of the Dogwood Alliance. We invited a representative from Enviva, a company that makes wood pellets, to our program. They declined. Dana, tell us about the Dogwood Alliance. What is it?
Dogwood Alliance is an organization that's focused on protecting the forests and communities of the southern U.S. from destructive industrial forestry practices. We've been around for about 17 years now.
Tell us about how you feel about the pellet industry.
Well, we're very concerned about the what seems to be an overnight explosive growth in the use of wood as fuel and the South becoming ground zero, including right here in North Carolina. And the impacts of that not only on our forests, wildlife habitat, watersheds, and water quality, but also on climate change, as well as the revitalization of our rural economies across the South.
Well, let me say, Enviva declined to be on the program because they did not want to be in conversation with environmentalists, but they did send us a statement. So let me read this, a part of the statement to you. All of the wood fiber Enviva uses is a byproduct of traditional saw timber industry. Our wood comes from working forests where landowners grow trees in order to cut, sell, and regrow them. Local economies in the Southeast have been hard hit by the decline in markets like pulp and paper, and as a result, many landowners have had to convert their forests for other uses. So what about that? First of all, it's byproducts. Secondly, if the land isn't used to grow trees and there's no market for that, it'll be clear cut. We'll put in a subdivision.
Okay, first to the question of it being a byproduct, as we heard earlier from both Bruce and Bob, landowners make decisions based on the markets that are available for the wood. They have, in companies like Enviva, have created a huge new market for small diameter trees and wood that would otherwise not be merchantable as saw timber. That means that creates value on the land for wood well beyond what exists in the saw timber industry. So they are contributing to the decisions of landowners not only to cut their trees, but to clear cut an entire forest where otherwise that wood would not have value. So, and that's exactly what we're seeing with Enviva. They are sourcing from some of the most valuable ecosystems remaining in the coastal plain, bottomland, hardwood, wetland forests, which are critical when left standing for wildlife habitat, water quality, protecting estuaries, and protecting coastal communities from flooding.
Well, Bob, companies like Enviva will say, we have to manage these forests. Our future depends on it. We don't want to clear cut and then put ourselves out of business because there are no more trees. That we do manage these forests rather than clear cut. Is there an economic argument to be made for not doing that? I mean, do they manage, and what are we seeing on the ground as a result of this industry and the demand so far?
So I think one thing that this particular demand brings into play that hasn't been in play for hardwood markets is the UK markets are sensitive to sustainability questions, right? And, you know, of course, they expect all the regulations in the South to be met. But beyond that, they look for sustainability criteria. Well, our pines are owned by large corporate owners who tend to be certified, and that's one way that you can show sustainability. Hardwoods in the South are not by and large certified. And so these companies who are harvesting hardwoods are having to essentially prepare their own individual portfolio of how they're going to meet those sustainability requirements. So one thing that these buyers do that most other hardwood buyers, say a hardwood pulp mill, might not be that concerned with is they are hiring their own foresters to come in and offer to do management plans and that kind of thing. And that's not out of the goodness of their heart. That's because the market that they're selling into requires that they do that. So they, in a way, this is up the level of certification of sustainability on hardwood lands, which traditionally sort of fell through the gaps in traditional certification schemes.
Bruce, in the UK, they're trying to meet this new renewable standard, 20% by 2020.
Yes.
Do they take into account what the energy cost in making pellets, shipping pellets, and then the environmental impact that it has from the regions where they're harvested? Is that all part of the equation?
That's all supposed to be part of their equations, and I can't tell you it's been their equations have been critiqued, but they are supposed to include the carbon emissions on this side of the Atlantic, including shipping to the port and shipping across the Atlantic when they figure the net gain and loss of carbon emissions.
Well, Dana, what about that? The fact is that because of this requirement, these sustainability requirements from the UK, from the ultimate buyer, that there's actually a higher standard these days in pulp than there was for the timber industry.
You know, that's just not true. Right now, there are not any binding sustainability criteria that really require companies to meet a high standard in the woods. You know, the UK standards that were recently adopted were very weak, criticized by all the environmental groups in Europe and in the U.S. You know, those standards just really don't do anything to prevent practices like Enviva is engaged in terms of clear-cutting our wetland forests and turning them into wood pellets. So I wanted to address this issue, though, around the science around carbon emissions in current European policy because, you know, right now the European is not just getting criticized for its carbon policy related to wood burning by environmental groups. Its own scientific committees are warning the EU government that you cannot treat burning trees as carbon neutral, and that in fact science is suggesting that when you burn a tree, it releases more carbon than burning coal for many decades, and therefore could accelerate climate change during the short time period that we have to be reducing carbon emissions and avoiding the catastrophic effects of climate change. So these studies are coming out from the European-owned scientists in their own government. This is not just concerns that environmentalists have. In fact, even just in August of this year, 62 scientists from the U.S., including some of the most prominent scientists in the field of climate change and ecology, sent a letter to the EU government expressing serious concern about the current EU policy on burning wood as a replacement to coal because of not only the widespread ecological impacts associated with that in the southern U.S., but also because of the potential increased carbon emissions that will be coming along with the burning of our trees for electricity.
And so, and there you're talking about just the emissions, a controversy over, and new science that's, or new research that suggests that you may be releasing as much carbon burning wood as coal, maybe more. But that doesn't take into account the production of wood pellets and the transportation of the wood pellets as well. Dana?
That's exactly right. So these are two really big environmental concerns, is the impacts on forest and the impacts on carbon emissions. And, you know, the other thing I want to say is when it comes to our rural economies, you know, we've really got to think about this, you know, is this is not the clean, green energy future that North Carolina needs to bank on for long-term economic growth. Because of the emerging science around this issue, even the own UK government's own officials, the Secretary of Energy, stated in a BBC report this year that they're pretty clear that burning wood is not a long-term energy strategy in the UK. The subsidies for this are going to come to a screeching halt in 2027. What does that mean for our rural communities who are attaching themselves to this industry right now in the next 20 years? You know, this is not the long-term, you know, strategy for growing our rural economies. North Carolina is already at the forefront of green energy, truly green forms of energy. We're number one in the Southeast right now in terms of solar installations. We're already manufacturing parts for wind turbines in Charlotte and for solar panels in Shelby. You know, this is the energy future for North Carolina, and the economic opportunity that we have to revitalize manufacturing jobs across the rural South.
Well, Bob, let's talk about some of the comparisons here, because on the one hand, you hear Dana saying, look, there's another renewable industry in wind and solar that might go begging as we enable this other industry in the short term. As a transition industry, why is wood pellet burning attractive in the short run, just from an economic point of view?
Well, first of all, I'm not an energy economist, but I've talked to several of them in the last couple of years. And as I understand it, as Bruce mentioned, to meet these aggressive goals in the short run, they have to, and they're decommissioning coal plants in this process. The quickest way they can get the base load power up is to repurpose those plants toward fuel that is considered renewable. And rightly or wrongly, the EU considers this a renewable fuel, and so there's a huge push to get that capacity up and switched over to this fuel, even with the recognition in the long run that it may not be the mainstay that it is in the transition phase.
So, Bruce, and I know this may not be a part of, you know, sort of your reporting on this because you've focused on the pellet industry, but it is and the millions of dollars that are going in investing in these new facilities, both production and shipping, not to mention the value to landowners. But it does have, or have you looked at the impact it might have on burgeoning industries, the other solar and wind, and whether or not it suppresses development in those industries while this transition, transition industry is being funded?
I can't say that I have. Certainly, Dana mentions that this is an important and entirely different track for our renewable energy sources. I don't know if that work will be affected by this directly or not.
Significantly, it's not in play here in the United States, where we have lots and lots of coal, certainly, and right here in North Carolina, where converting to wood pellets would be if we wanted to.
I mean, that, to me, that's part of the irony, is that we're having a conversation here about the renewability of wood, but not in response to any U.S. policy about renewable energy, completely based on EU policy. And obviously, our energy future in the U.S. depends on actually having a renewable energy policy in the U.S., which doesn't look promising in the near future, I guess.
And, Dana, that's what you were saying about if this money and development were going into developing other renewable sources, wind and solar to name two, it might have a more profitable use.
A more profitable use and a more environmentally beneficial use as well. I mean, let's just be really clear about this. You know, clearing forests and burning them to generate electricity is not clean and it's not green. And I think most people out there, you know, who are looking at this issue get that on a fundamental level.
But let's talk about the wood pellets themselves and the production of these, Bruce. You've been to the plant. What are these things? What do they look like? And what does it take to make them?
Pardon me. Well, a lot of it starts out in the forest. The logging machines are cutting down big trees and slicing their trunks into 16-foot logs to go to the sawmill. And then they're taking hollow, rotten trees that the sawmill won't accept, or crooked small trees, or the tops of these big trees, things that won't go to the sawmill, they're putting them in another pile. That stuff goes into a chipper and makes wood chips in a lot of cases. Sometimes they send smaller trees directly to the mill. But anyway, the trees are converted to chips. They're dried because half the weight is moisture. And then they're ground into like flour and heated and extruded into something that turns them into pellets that meet the specifications of the utility company that's buying them. What comes out the other end, they can be different sizes. What Enviva produces for Drax and these other utility buyers in Europe are about the diameter of a cigarette, maybe a couple inches long. And they they look like large rabbit pellets.
So the great news is they're a lot, they weigh a lot less. So for shipping and all of that, it's a kind of an economic factor. But then that sounds like a lot of energy. Do we know what the balance of energy is and what the carbon footprint of pellet production is?
They say they take that into account, and I don't know the calculations, and I know that those calculations are disputed, but they are supposedly included in that math.
Bob, is it moving too quickly for us to get a handle on in terms of, I mean, we talk about managing these forests and doing the math to do the equations to know if it's neutral or not. Is the demand growing too fast for us to make these calculations?
I think there's two ways to look at that. One would be to challenge the EU policy as, you know, declaring wood as renewable prematurely. That may or may not be true. That's not my areas of expertise. In the U.S., we're sort of reacting to that decision. So I can't really speak to the correctness of that decision. But in the South, I would say that because of the recession and because of high agriculture prices that have been true over the last few years, a lot of people in the forest community on the supply side are looking at this as a blessing. Now, folks that may not be looking at it as a blessing are the pine pulp mills whose demand haven't gone down. And when Enviva moves south or you look at Georgia and Florida, they're competing for the pine resource, and that's driving up the pine resource. So paper competes in the global market. The pine paper producers are not so happy about this increased price and increased demand. Universally, landowners, the organizations of landowners said, you know, premature would not be the word they would use. It would be finally we have a
demand in a market for our product. Well, Dana, what about you've used the word clear cut a couple of times, but what about the argument that companies like Enviva, and I will repeat, we did invite them to be on this program and they declined. Companies like Enviva, it's in their best interest not to clear cut. They can't afford to clear cut these forests. Trees are their business. If there aren't trees growing, they have nothing to sell.
Well, we see companies that are involved in the wood products industry source from clear cut forests all the time. Trees grow back, okay? So just because a forest is cut doesn't mean that there won't be, you know, trees on the land 10 years from now moving forward, 20 years from now that are available to cut again. That's a separate issue from whether or not that is good for the economy, good for the environment, okay? So, you know, they are sourcing from clear-cut wetland forests.
And they would say that, well, okay, so it's back, and therefore it's renewable, we're proving it, the trees are back, and we've provided economic growth. Talk about the impact in the meantime to the environment and to the ecology.
Exactly. So these bottomland hardwood forests, for example, this is just one example, where we know Enviva is sourcing its wood pellets, represent sort of a lifeboat for many different species of plants and animals in a region that is an ocean of pine plantations. And the mature bottomland hardwoods, forests that are older, provide critical habitat for many different kinds of species. They're also really critical in terms of protecting our watersheds and local communities from flooding. And they also store a lot of carbon. So when these forests are cleared, all of those values are erased temporarily. Now, the question is whether or not, you know, those forests will ever be allowed to grow back to maturity again in the presence of a market that is valuing small diameter, you know, young trees. And what we've seen over the historical landscape of the South over many decades is that our forests, we are losing important habitat across the region for many different types of species because of industrial logging.
Bruce, tell me about the political landscape in North Carolina right now. We hear the tension between environmentalists and the sort of the economic argument. Is this in tension? Is there a kind of an equilibrium, or is the force moving toward production almost without check?
Well, I haven't heard any political voices at the statewide level, at elected officials level, expressing concern about these environmental issues, at least not with regard to the pellet industry.
Well, the governor has already talked about this, but he's looking at the economic value, right?
Yes. The McCrory administration has moved pretty quickly to approve these two new arrangements at the two state ports to facilitate the export starting in 2015 of from these new pellet mills.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Bruce Seisloff is a reporter for the News and Observer, Bob Apt, a professor of forest economics at North Carolina State, Dana Smith, executive director of the Dogwood Alliance. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank. Enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it.
Coming up next, a thriller set in the time of the Great Flood of the Mississippi River. Stay tuned.